Welcome back to part two of this second week of January homework. So we'll get started. So this first one says, hi Helen, I'm confused about your statement in today's session that I can absolutely have anything I want. 5 months ago, my beloved son died unexpectedly. For 9 years, I've worried about him. I've tried to help him overcome the disease of addiction and loved him to the best of my ability. I was so hopeful that he would one day be healthy and reasonably happy. I would have gladly traded him places. How can your statement be true in light of the fact that he has died? Thank you. So there's two parts to this. I'll address the second one afterwards. The desire for your child to be happy and to be safe and to feel peaceful is, of course, very, very normal. We all feel as parents, don't we? As a mother myself, I totally understand that. I'm going to ask you to question some things that may seem to be already very, very true. I'm going to ask you to look at death in a different light than what you may see it as right now. Most of us are convinced that we are this body, and that also translates to everyone else in our life, that my child in this instance is that body that's standing in front of me. And so when that body has gone, we believe that they have gone, but really what they are has never incarnated fully. It's like 1% of our being, less than 1% of our being actually incarnates. The rest is still invisible and intangible and present and conscious. And if you take the analogy of if I put a glove on my hand, the hand seems to be different while the glove is there. But the glove is not me. The body, in this case, is not me. I am using it for a while. And then when I've finished using it, I will take it off. And what happens is then most human beings agree that that person has gone. But the arm, the hand is still there. It's just invisible. And you can test this out now. When you ask what you are, what am I really? You eventually come to the fact that I am invisible, intangible. Just because the visible, tangible part of someone, their body, mind, vehicle has gone, doesn't mean that they're gone. The pain that we feel, the grief, the loss, I don't mean in any way to diminish that. But I am going to ask you to not diminish, but invalidate that. What I mean is I'm going to ask you to look at this from a higher perspective, that if he isn't really gone, then how do you know that your wish has not come true, your desire has not come true? Maybe that for your son, and this is just a suggestion, that him leaving this particular body in which he was having these challenges in this body-mind vehicle was the way for him to experience what you're wishing for him, greater peace and clarity. There is a huge assumption in this question that his journey has ended with the end of the body, and it absolutely hasn't. It's like leaving the body is like taking off. If you've ever come home from a long day and you sit down and you take off your socks and shoes, and just the feel of your feet touching the smooth carpet or the floor, just that fresh and clean and new feeling that comes when you put your feet, when your feet make contact with the floor. That's kind of the feeling that we get when a being leaves their body. It's much, much different. There is no area of human existence where we are more wrong about what death actually is. So I'm going to ask you some really tough, challenging things here, and I'd like to ask you to question, is he really gone? Or is his body just simply gone? And has that ended his journey? Not at all. My father left his body, I think 7 years ago now, and I have a better relationship with him now than I did when he was in his body, because he had many insecurities, many illnesses, diseases in his body, and his life was very, his physical life was very limited for a very long time, and there was serious depression and all kinds of things because of that. And now we have a relationship, two beings in a relationship is not two physical bodies. That's only one way we experience that relationship. The relationship really is between the beings, individual expressions of the self. And that is still possible for you now. But not if you believe that he is gone. He never was a separate being, just the same as you aren't. And you have gotten your wish because he has let go of a lot of the burdens that he was struggling with while he had this body-mind vehicle. And at some point, he'll probably draw to him another body-mind vehicle to attempt again to transcend these beliefs. But it doesn't have to mean the end. There's no ending in the way that we think when we're talking about physical death. Any more so than if I take off my shoe, if my body's wearing shoes, I take them off. It's not an end, is it? It's just a taking something off. As if the body is an outfit or a garment that we wear to experience a temporary sense of time and limitation and separateness and diversity and duality until we've had enough of that. So I'd like you to reconsider. I know this may be hard to hear as a parent, but I'm hoping that you're asking out of sincere wish to really see how it actually is. And I'm sure that you are. Is he really gone? If I totally believe that someone's gone, then in my grief and my loss and my sadness, I'll cut off the connection that's possible. Just because the physical, visible part of them has gone. Like when this body goes, I will still be right here. Where else could I go when I'm everywhere? And even the individual wave that is Helen will still be right here. The energy, this separate, the individual unique expression that makes me me. I just don't have a body anymore. It's not the same as being gone. We must really come to see this body is not all we are. It is the slowest vibrating part of what we are, like the purple in the spectrum of a rainbow. But there are all these other colors and frequencies and dimensions that we exist on simultaneously. The human body just being the slowest of them, the slowest vibrating, which is why it feels solid, tangible, this body. So I really want you to question that. How and why are you so sure that you haven't got what you asked for? Haven't got it in the way that you expected, perhaps. But that healing has occurred. And now he'll be better equipped because of your love and support the next time he decides to, whenever he's ready to take an incarnation. And I'd be fairly certain that he is there to connect with. But to do that, we have to really question if he's actually gone, just because the body's gone. Just like you drive a car until it wears out. You fix it. Eventually you get out of that car and you trade it in for a newer model that's capable of doing different things. There's no sense that I'm broken just because my car needs to be replaced, is there? So just begin to, if you can, to look at it this way. Just be open. And if there's one thing that I could really stress here is just to be willing to be totally wrong about death. Totally wrong. And I know we discussed it in the class yesterday. I don't mean you as a separate being, totally wrong. Just our attitudes, our human attitudes to what death is. It's not at all what we think it is. And the reason we fear it and don't like it so much is because we feel a sense of loss that someone has gone. The essence of what they are, even their unique expression, is still right here. Still right here. Cannot leave because it never arrived in that way. The body arrived and that will leave. The essence of who they are is essential and immortal, continuous, unending, cannot go. It's the one thing the self cannot do. So the second part you've put here, I really dislike law of attraction, you and me both. I understand it as a concept that applies to the separate self only and seems to be used as a tool that individuals use to gain something from the material world. It's a turn off for me to even hear the term being mentioned. If there is a way to understand this concept from a non-dual perspective, I'm open to learning more. Thank you. So law of attraction, really, you can't really see that in a non-dual perspective because the law of attraction really, as it's popularly known, is if I do this, if I change my vibration, I will draw this thing to me, or this experience, or this state, or this whatever it is, money, time, whatever, the right person, the right job. And the very assumption there is that they are two separate things. This is exactly what we're working to overcome in this month's work, that cause and effect are two separate things. So instead here, we're looking at cause and effect being the same thing, just like when I stand in front of a mirror, the mirror reflects back to me my physical appearance. And the physical appearance, the reflection in the mirror cannot be there without my body standing in front of it. We cannot have a reflection in a mirror without anyone standing in front of it. So they must be the same one. So we're coming to see here the cause of something is really the internal attitude that we have, as I was saying in before the previous homework. And that reflects as this situation in my body, in my life, in my finances, in my relationships, in my career, all of that, in my awakening, especially at this point for most of us. Reflection is not other than, we're not doing something to get something to come. We are seeing what's true. It's never been true that I'm unworthy. And then the reflection agrees with that. Just like if you stand in front of the mirror and you move to the left, the reflection moves instantaneously the same way, doesn't it? It has to change as you change. You see clearly, it has to be seen clearly out there. Out there and in here are not different. As you remember from lesson two, we put the glass of water in the bowl. In here suddenly feels in here and out there feels like everything else in the universe. But really, it's not really, it's the same. So it may seem confusing to understand the difference between what I'm terming as causality, as lesson two and law of attraction, but really just to recognize, and I tried so hard to make law of attraction work, but the more I tried to make it work, the more I was emphasizing that the thing I wanted was outside of me. And actually the things got worse and worse. It's only when I began to realize how I feel is being reflected and the reflection is not separate from. So if I'm trying to get something out there, trying to change something out there, it's never going to work permanently. And increasingly as an awakened being, it's going to work less and less because out there is me. If I'm trying to change out there, I'm trying to change myself. By doing that, I'm stating that I'm not already that. So begin to look at, there's the self and then there's all the ways that you're expressing in manifestation. Manifestation, the world in general, is your reflection. It's a mirror, a three-dimensional mirror, ongoing, real-time, continuous reflection. So seeing clearly what you are and also what you're not really unworthy, that you're not really scared, that you're not really able to lose anyone, as we were saying in that previous thing. And that begins to reflect immediately in the reflection, which we know as our world. So I hope that helps. But please do ask again. These are important subjects. It's helping everyone. and you're very brave in your questions, in bringing those forward. So I want to applaud you for that. Please do ask me again and again. These are subjects that humans have some very fixed ideas about, so it never hurts to go over it again. Okay, so next one. I've had so much resistance to this homework this week, so I know that it's worth pushing through. So as I had arranged a one-to-one and asked about this in the session, which was amazing. I recognized in the session that I kept drifting off and not hearing what was said, so the resistance was confirmed. So when we were having the one-to-one, me and this being that sent in this homework, that I'd say a particular set of words, and this person was saying to me, just say that again, I completely didn't hear that sentence. So the sentence that needed to be heard was that your attention drifted off, like kind of metaphorically fingers in the ears. You know, don't say this, I don't really want to hear it. But you recognize that that was going on, which is wonderful. I learned in that session that what I see as an outside world is really just an effect of the beliefs in a me that can be separate. Such relief to understand it then. And then I think about this morning and it's gone again. Think about it this morning, it's gone again. I remembered with joy that mind will never get it, and relaxed. Good. Later, there was a slight sense of overwhelm with too much going on out there. There was a level of knowing this not to be so. I was able to look at the homework and ask, why am I so sure that cause and effect are different or two? I could see that the sense of overwhelm and the unworthiness and not good enough were all one. So I feel not good enough that I can't get all this done, and it reflects as too much to do, very literally an overwhelmment. I know to take it deeper and question it all. As all of this was seemingly playing out, there was a knowing this isn't real, but it's showing me what I still believe in. So I can know that I am the self, I'm infinite and everywhere, and still be aware of the separate beliefs that are playing without buying into them. And it's easier to unravel them there from that place, isn't it? It's easier to see what I'm still believing that isn't true. Okay. Another thing I've recognized is a seeming disparity between A, all one, and self, appearing as self in many forms. Oh, okay, so A, all one and self appearing as self in many forms, and B, as someone separate to the others. I recognize that the body may move and sort things. At the same time, the body, the sorting, and the things are all self. I feel this is an area where I can take things further, so I can instantly see, yes, it is all one, and live completely as that. So yeah, for me, it makes no difference if I seem to be operating as a separate being. If I'm sat in my stillness, they're both the same thing. And I have no preference for either. And I think that's what you're kind of alluding to here, that there's this idea that they're different and I'll prefer one over the other. I prefer experiencing my unlimited nature. And I'll reject the busy to-do-ness of the someone, the human being. Eventually, it doesn't make any difference because you feel the same anyway. You feel the same way no matter which mode we're calling it here. Okay, cause and effect is all one thing. If I think of myself as a separate being and the effect shows, which is all self, if I know with true conviction that all the seeming world of objects and effects are truly one, then how can they impact or need to be different? As I'm typing this, it's becoming clearer. Nothing to change as they're in no thing, or nothing needs to change as they're in no thing, in capitals. One ocean with many waves of water. How can the wave be separate to the ocean? More to look at. So as I see these creations, these manifestations are just waves appearing in me, I don't feel, or I feel less and less need to change them. I might create some experience of lack accidentally because of thought was being believed. lack of well-being, lack of health, lack of time, lack of patience, lack of money, whatever way it's showing up. And I can come to see that that's just my temporary creation, and it'll change by itself as I see clearer. And there's less and less of an urge to try and fix things, isn't there? Further to this, I've looked at cause and effect around stuff, and when seen in truth, it melts away. I looked at an area that I was very stubbornly believing that it couldn't change. It was COVID restrictions are stopping me from seeing my family. How could that change? I really looked at the belief in the separate me and family, COVID restrictions, time. I saw deeply that the one self can't be distant from itself. So it's a belief in otherness here, isn't it? That's really these other beings that I want to go see or spend time with. And we feel justified in feeling restricted from doing that because it seems that I can't spend time with these other beings. But as I recognize more and more that there aren't any other beings, then the reflection's going to also agree with that, isn't it? That it'll begin to shift, to turn around. And you really are that powerful. I recognize that there is more communication within my lovely family. There's still some work to do on knowing the potential of any situation is always there. Deeper and deeper seeing around this, loving it. Good. It sounds like you're making excellent progress here. And I know from the session that we did that you're breaking through in this one particular area as well as others, but this has been a sticky, problematic area where there's been some separation for a while. So very, very good. Okay. Dearest Helen, I'm grateful for the extra class on January the 9th. Mind is presenting lots of resistance, distraction lately, as there is much it wants, needs to take in, both from the personal and collective story these days. Additionally, mind is challenged by lesson 2 and a fervent longing to open the veil to understand it. The personal story feels a bit confused, if not frightened, these days. So I just want to, before I read the rest of it, I really want to say that desire, that kind of intensity to get lesson 2, is very common. I remember feeling it myself. Somebody mentioned it, I think, in the class yesterday as well, that tension, like I have to get this. But again, I'd like to recontextualize it, that this class, this graduate homework, all of it is the way it is already being understood. It's the unfolding in progress for you of the understanding, rather than this is going to, and I've got to get it. Careful not to separate yourself from the understanding that you want. If I've got to get this, really get this, and somehow try to get this understanding, I'm stating that it's not already here. Instead, I can relax when I feel that fervent longing, as you said, allow the understanding to reveal itself effortlessly. There's nothing you need to do to understand causality. And there's nothing you can do to understand causality. Your job is just to expose yourself to this material again and again and again. At some point, it clicks in. Even before there's a clicking in, it begins to affect your life already. And the clicking in is really inconsequential from my perspective. Just all I'm doing is giving the self, the noumenon, you, the information that's been missing to put the last few pieces of this jigsaw puzzle together that's called awakening. And you've been trying to do this jigsaw puzzle without a couple of pieces, and I'm wondering why it doesn't look right. This isn't the picture that's on the box, you know. And once you have the information, it's already beginning to be assimilated. The self learns by something being repeated again and again. The mind learns by listening to something once and really trying to understand it. The self learns by just hearing, just hearing, just hearing, just hearing, And then at some point it's accepted as familiar and acted upon. Very different way of learning. Effortless, without struggle, just exposing yourself to the material again and again. That's it. No more effort needed than that. So if you feel that angst, you can just kind of, oh, I'm trying to figure this out again. Let me just see if I can relax and know that that's happening without me doing anything. And I'll just wait for an aha moment whenever that arises. There's nothing you need to do to make that happen. In fact, anything you try to do to make that happen is going to slow it down. Can't stop it, but it'll slow it down. I wrote this in my notes a few days ago. My mind remains unsettled about it, so I offer it as a question. Are subject and subjectivity being used interchangeably? Also, are terms object and objectivity being used interchangeably? In the following paragraph from chapter 5, so as a quote from chapter 5, true subjectivity excludes any possibility of objectivity. Then there are no objects in the subjective. What we actually are is pure subjectivity devoid of any objects. The subject and the object are the same thing. So definitions as my mind understands them. Object, person or thing having something done to it. Subject, person or thing doing something. Objective or objectivity based on facts. Subject or subjectivity based on feelings, appearances, etc. It has occurred to me this question is mind resistance on overdrive. Maybe I should simply move beyond these few sentences and carry on. Thank you for considering my question with much love and gratitude. So those are the classical, the ones that you've written there, sort of Google definitions. If you Googled subject and object, there would be those kind of things there. But subjective means, in this case, what I am experiencing. Subject is the one separate being experiencing. So the subject, me, what I'm experiencing, and the object of my experience, what I am actually experiencing. So the experiencer here is a separate being, subject, object, what is being experienced. So me here and this other being out there, the other being is the object in that example. Subject is me, the separate being. So the subjectivity then is pure experiencing itself, pure awareness itself. That's everywhere. There isn't a separate being experiencing. It's just subjectivity with no subject, no separate subject. And pure subjectivity is simply that one being that's everywhere, experiencing as all these, seemingly all these others. Object is something being experienced by the separate being. Therefore, subject and object, you cannot have an object, what's experienced, without the subject, the separate being, to experience it. Right? So when they seem to be the same thing, all that's really left is the subjective awareness in which the idea of a subject and an object are arising, seemingly separate. I hope that helps, but if it doesn't gel with you, it could just be that this chapter, this way of describing it, doesn't gel with you, and that's fine. And that's why there is this whole list in Dissolving the Ego, and experiencing your own subjectivity is just one of those. I would suggest reading that chapter in Dissolving the Ego as well if you want to. And if you still can't quite get it, it could be resistance, but I don't think so. I think it's mind trying to update its definitions to understand more, and that's fine. If it doesn't gel, simply move to a different chapter in Reality Check. There is three chapters that describe the same thing a different way. And chapter 5 is one of those three chapters. So just pick another one and see. It doesn't really matter. It's only really words that have definitions attached to them. It might be resistance, but I don't really feel that. I feel that there are worldly definitions of what object and subject is, and then there's a more, I guess, the way that I'm using them. And there's a reason that recognizing your own subjectivity is one of the last ones on the list of the 15 or whatever it is in dissolving the ego. And that was because when I would hear teachers talk about subjectivity, it confused me completely. I couldn't understand it. I didn't know the difference between subject and subjectivity. And that's why it was the last, because it was pretty much the last one of the ways it revealed to, it's always revealing itself to me, but the last one of the ways, the major ways that I'd been confused about. So it's very normal. And it could just be that you just prefer self and ego. You know, self is subjectivity, ego is the subject, and objects are what it experiences. Objectivity is the possibility for objects, the possibility for objects arising. So hope that helps. But again, do ask if you need to. Hi, Helen, I was doing this month's causality homework on my mental health issues. I initially thought that my cause and effect was, I suffer greatly because I have mental health and behavioral issues. But through contemplating this homework, I was able to see that the cause and effect was really, I suffer greatly because I believe my mental health and behavioral issues are a bad mistake and need to be gotten rid of. Then through doing lesson three over and over, it is becoming clearer and clearer. There is no mental health and behavioral diagnosis, only the one self appearing as this. And automatically it is known that it's not a problem to who I really am. Nor was it ever a mistake to be gotten rid of. Upon this realization, expansive, unconditional love floods my consciousness, and I feel the peaceful bliss of the one self knowing I was always this. So this, even these issues that I've been trying so hard to get rid of as a separate being, are embraced as my creations, my children, my offspring. These are arising out of me, and I don't need to reject them. They're a part of me. They are me. And from the self, there is no capacity to say it should not be this way. And when we embrace that, or in this case, I should not be this way, right? When we embrace that, it begins to heal by itself. And that is what you're experiencing. We're in self, we're in denial of reality when we're in denial of ourself, how ourself is, because reality and self are the same, aren't they? If I'm sure I'm not how I should be, then my whole life is going to be upside down, because life is me. And I am life and I am reality. This wonderful breakthrough, this unconditional love, peaceful bliss, it's the natural symptom, outcome, result, reflection of unconditional love of the self, isn't it? It's natural. Haven't changed anything about that self. Just unconditionally accepting this is how I am. And maybe from the self's perspective, this is absolutely fine. How I am is fine. And as I accept myself unconditionally, love myself unconditionally, it naturally begins to heal what we've been trying to heal anyway. Naturally, it has to. It's wonderful to read. So you continue. And then I can see how the embracing of myself as unconditional love has changed the reflection in the last year. I am no longer in my terribly stressful job and spend a good day, good part of my day doing what I love and talking to others about. I find that my finances are being taken care of better than I could ever think possible. And I am now regularly with other beings who are more loving, understanding, and accepting of me exactly as I am. I look back on the changes that have happened and I feel something I haven't felt in a long time. Gratitude. And you finished with thank you. It's wonderful that you are able to stop and see not only the acceptance, the unconditional love, also the that that's been happening over the year, and that that is already reflecting in your circumstances, that that is already the reflection has changed, that you're able to see and to notice that the moment you begin to change your attitude, of course it's gathering pace now, as you've said in this homework, it's becoming very clear and very obvious what the way forward is, unconditional love. And it's now, and for some time has been reflecting back to you in a different way, hasn't it? Lots of things have changed in your outer world, and some of them you've listed here, and you're able to see that happening. That the more I love myself unconditionally, the more I accept that I'm really not upset for the reason I think. I'm really upset because I'm rejecting myself and my creations, whatever they are. And if I look at them without labeling them as good or bad, they're just more to love about me, aren't they? You see that changing. So very, very happy. And that gratitude just brings more, doesn't it? The more you embrace that gratitude, and the more simple it gets, the more I accept and love what is, the more it changes right in front of me, it heals. And it really is and has always been that simple, if we can kind of come to understand that. And this is profound. And that is the unbroken love of the self, the unchallenged self with a capital S, self with a small s here, become the same thing. Lovely. Last but not least in this section, dear Helen, today's additional class was really helpful in freeing up some block that I've been stuck in for some time. I realized that I've been operating under some subliminal belief, I want gets nothing. I had that one as a kid over and over again. It just struck me out of the blue and relates back to one of those childhood beliefs that was installed by my parents wanting me to ask for something in a more polite way, except I took it out of context and somehow believed that I wasn't allowed to want or have anything. This has played out in my life to the point where I usually intellectually talk myself out of any of my wants, resulting in a feeling of disempowerment and frustration, which is justified by a spiritual belief that desire is a bad thing. I think there are some tangles here. I'm now questioning the belief that desire is a bad thing, and I'm open to what happens. So good, so good, so good. Life manifestation runs on desire. You know, everything in the manifestation expands through desire. In the absolute unmanifest pure awareness, there's no desire at all and nothing to desire, which is where this idea comes, that there should be no desire. There isn't already in the awareness. And then it manifests as a human being. There's going to be a lot of desire. More desire, the more awake you get, because the more you realize it's possible for you to make a real difference in the world. And I wrote a book called The Empowerment Courses. I used to teach the Abundance Manifestation and Desire course, which is transcribed in that book, absolutely because of this point. There's a spiritual stigma to say that the self could have a desire, but it's appearing as a human being and all that comes with it. Of course you're going to have the desires. They're natural and they'll go on for as long as the body occurs. You know, if I'm in pain, I'm going to desire to feel better. If I'm hungry, I'm going to desire to eat. If I'm struggling to breathe, I'm going to desire another breath. It's natural, isn't it? Life is always reaching for more. It's always expanding manifestation, life, same thing. Always. And that's how it runs. And human beings are a huge part of that. To embrace that desire, but as an awakened being, it's not separate to the thing it desires. It's powerful. What happens when we start to really desire world peace, but from a place where there's no separation? I'm so glad you're accepting this about yourself. It's really one of my things as a teacher that I really kind of can't abide is this kind of the things that are stuck in our awakening, in the way that we awake, and we all have these attitudes about awakening. We've read some scriptures. I don't mean I can't abide it in you. I mean, in the kind of general attitudes, I have to challenge those. I'm a bit of a rebel in that way. Who said desire was bad? Really, it's that some scriptures say that desire should disappear. And they do. Right now in the silence, there's no desire, is there? Doesn't want anything, doesn't need anything. But the silence is also appearing as you and what you want. And you'll feel an upsurge of desire, a lot more desires coming when you start to transcend these beliefs that have limited them, intellectualizing yourself out of them, as you said here. And you'll begin to really recognize that now you can finally get what you want because these beliefs are disappearing. And that's what I was saying yesterday in the class. There's nothing wrong with wanting a better car or a new haircut or to get your nails done or whatever it is that we're wanting. It's not less spiritual than wanting awakening, is it? Because it is the same. It is the same out there, manifestation, in here, unmanifest. Same, same, one, one. So wonderful. My question relates to how much effort we may still need to put in to outward action in making something happen. For example, in terms of the health of the body, we are bombarded with so much information about what to do and not to do for optimum health, to the point of fear and worry about bringing on bad health if X, Y, and Z are not done. If I question this fear, how much can I let go of outward action regarding healthy behaviors? It kind of relates to the adage, trust in Allah, but tie up your camel. It feels like a leap of faith to be entirely trusting in the noumenon. Any insights into these issues would be gratefully received. Namaste. So outward action, the body is always just doing, and it's doing by itself, and it's doing by itself all the time and always has been. To trust in the noumenon gets easier when we realize there never was a separate being making choices of what to do or not do. In my own pathway, I found that my looking after my body, I tried to do that as a separate being and ended up sabotaging it every single time. Overeating, not exercising enough, all of that, all of the self-sabotaging. And then as the self, allowing those activities to arise spontaneously, where the self recognizes the body is itself, and there's a respect and a love for the body. Actions aren't done out of fear of survival, lack of survival if I don't do these things. Actions are done to take care of the body and to keep it healthy from a place of love and respect and appreciation for the amazing opportunity we have when we have a human body and we're on the path to awakening and succeeding at awakening like we are here. Then we're extraordinarily grateful for the body and what it can show us and reflect. And because of that, we take even better care of the body. If we just come to realize those actions have always been occurring spontaneously, just because we've been thinking that we choose them doesn't mean it's ever been so. Ego is just another synonym for the noumenon. And it's easy then to trust the noumenon, isn't it? It's easy then to trust. It's always been the noumenon in charge. It's just ever more able to take care of itself, the body, its life, its relationships, as it's shedding these beliefs from itself, from its life, from its world, from its experience. Naturally, you're going to gravitate towards healthier foods, getting more fresh air, things that make you feel better, looking after the body. The best way to love the body is to not see any separation, to release illusion, because it is that and only that that is the main cause. The dis-ease in the body is really a reflection of the dis-ease in the seeing, in the harmony, in the vibration. And that is always the root cause of everything. So healthy attitudes, healthy seeing is going to reflect in healthy behaviors and actions and choices. And that just happens more and more by itself anyway. There never was any causal entity, separate being that was choosing those things. So I hope that helps. naturally it'll change all by itself. You'll find yourself drawn to do things you wouldn't do before, or drawn to do the same things that you did before, but they'll be enjoyable. They'll be, you know, am I taking this brisk walk because I got to get my cardio in, you know, because otherwise my cholesterol will go, or am I taking this brisk walk because it's fun to feel alive, it's fun to have a body, it's fun to be able to move, experience the sensation of moving around when I'm really everywhere, to experience that kind of opposite for a while. And all of that begins to happen by itself. Lovely. I hope that is helpful. So we'll leave it there and we'll continue with part 3. We've got 4 more to do. Thank you.